Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Podcast, episode 57.
Single set. That's French.
Hey, everybody. Hope you've been having a good last, 2 weeks. It's been pretty dark and pretty sad in the circus community, I think. Just some sad and weird news recently.
Yeah, some sad, weird news.
I think probably the saddest is that Raph Cruz, who is this amazing circus performer, a legend, had been in Seven Fingers, the original cast of Traces, the star of Cirque du Soleil's Iris, really tons of really, really good shows, passed away in his apartment in France last week.
I am very happy. I got to meet Raph very briefly, but and when we were in Adelaide, he happened to be there because he had just done Club Sizzle in Sydney, I think. And so he was there because Joshua and Jorn Dawson got married. So Raph was there. He saw Slumber. We connected pretty quickly because if you've ever met Raph, he's like one of those people that just is like awesome. And you're like, oh, wow, you're awesome. I want to be your friend right away.
Yeah, such a warm, kind dude. And also just like a huge inspiration. I remember seeing Traces when I was like 13. It was really the first big contemporary circus show I'd ever seen. We've talked about that in a few different episodes. And Raph was in it. And Raph and his brother did the circus act that was a super cool hand-to-hand, high-energy piece that I think most people know him for, if you know him. And it's just such a bummer.
It is. I saw him in Intercession, I don't know, like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And, but when we were talking in Adelaide, I was like, you know, I've only seen you in that. And I don't even know your brother hand-to-hand act. And he was like, oh, I can show it to you because we have it on video. And he showed me not the act, but at the very end of it, they like replay a rehearsal of it where he like pushes his brother in the wrong spot and his brother goes like flying. And I was like, that's why you showed me. But like, that's who he was, you know, like, I mean, I didn't know him very well, but I'm really glad I got to know him. But we had a joke because he was supposed to be on the podcast in Adelaide, but his flight got messed up. So he had to leave. But we had a joke that we would save him for episode 431. So when we get to episode 431, because we will, that will be Raph's episode.
Yes, it will be. In other weird, depressing, sad news, sorry to start a podcast being sad, but I think these things have to be talked about. There's been a spate of, we'll say, inappropriate conduct with children by various different people in the circus industry that's come to light in the last couple of weeks and months. And I've seen different stories connected in different places, but I just want to highlight a few here. Obviously, the highest profile one is Barry Lubin. Barry was Grand Mal Clown in Big Apple, arguably the most recognizable clown in North America, at least in the U.S., from his time on Big Apple and on Ringling.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you don't know anything about the circus, you most likely know Grandma the Clown because you've seen Barry perform, like you said. You know, he was in both those circuses for years. We actually had him on the podcast. So I was, you know, definitely shocked when I saw this news. And I think you can read the article on the New York Times if you are interested in more specifics. But for the sake of just the facts, he did some inappropriate behavior with minors.
He lured a 16-year-old girl to his trailer to take inappropriate photos. I mean, that is essentially what it is. And there's a lot of pretty disturbing details to that story. We're not going to talk about the podcast. But just the shock and horror and betrayal I think many people, including us, felt really shook me for, like, days.
Well, I mean, it is someone we had a relationship with. But since, you know, obviously we have not been in contact with Barry and we took his podcast down. But I think it really shakes you when it's someone you know and trusted and they shock you with, like, what they're capable of.
And it's not even adults, it's with kids. And I think just that is a step even more despicable than the average Me Too story.
Yeah, I think, like, in a larger sense, this is, you know, we've been talking to some people who either are clowns or used to be clowns and just, like, how it's shaken them because, you know, I don't think clowns were the most popular people before this either. You know, there was this whole like scary clown thing. So many people are afraid of clowns. And then, you know, you have one of the most high profile American clowns, you know, also have this happen. It's, I think, must be hard if you're a clown right now.
I would want to highlight two other stories, and Lindsay and I were debating whether or not to talk about this on the podcast because it is dark and depressing. But there was also a clown in Switzerland named David Lariblay, who is similarly famous to Barry, but in Germany and Switzerland, he was the star of Canis, who back this past November was accused of and then convicted of forcibly kissing a 14-year-old girl in a hotel room. And in a separate story, one of the co-owners of Cirque la Symphonie, which is based in Georgia, I believe, was caught and convicted, spending 2 years in prison. I think back maybe this month even, secretly filming, again, teenage kids in hotel rooms. Thankfully, I think one of the boys who was being filmed caught him and reported it. But just totally disturbing. Like, what the F is going on? You know, I'm thankful to be on the smorgasbord and hear all the policies that are in place and are being put in place to prevent this from happening. But these things need to be preventatives need to be more widespread about this. And you know, parents who have kids who are in circus programs need to ask questions about this. And you know, if you're a young listener out there, I don't have much advice other than to say, if you think something weird is going on, you have to say something.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a hard topic to talk about on a podcast because, you know, our opinion is just our opinion. We don't have like an answer or insight to anything more than anyone else. I think we can just react to it like we would a normal person reacting to a, you know, a string of news that hasn't been very great this past week and a half. And, you know, I hope by talking about it on the podcast, people can listen to it and I don't know, appreciate at least that we're trying to have a conversation about it,
And talk about it.
and talk about it because it definitely needs to be talked about as uncomfortable as it is. You know, that's why like I think people feel more comfortable, especially like adult women coming out about these things now, because there is a chance for people to tell their stories and what's happened and not feel a backlash about it. So I think that's a positive. That's like a po coming out of all of this is we're listening.
All right.
So
That was the sad news.
yeah,
We're moving on. We're gonna go back to some regular.
we're not moving on, but we're
We're
gonna,
literally moving on to the next topic. That's
yeah, we're
all we're
moving on to the
doing.
next topic. So Cirque du Soleil, more Cirque du Soleil, never ending news about them. They have a new 200, I can't even say without laughing, $200 million flagship project that they are producing in Hangzhou, China. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but it's about 2 hours, I think, south of Shanghai. But it has a hyper modern permanent theater, 5 stages, 50 artists, 1,500 seats. And I think they're hoping to open in February of 2019. So anyone who's in
Like in a year from
Hangzhou,
now?
China, you can go see it. Yeah, I guess.
But they had some interesting statistics about who they thought would be going, right? Because they only think 2% of Westerners are going to come and
Yeah, it
see it.
says Cirque du Soleil expects to welcome 80% Chinese tourists. 18. So isn't that locals then? Chinese. Well, I guess if they're touring
China's a
in
big
China,
country,
yeah, true.
right?
18% of tourists from other regions in Asia, and 2% of Westerners. So, you know, I guess yeah, it's really for the Asian market, which, you know, makes sense.
Goes back to their expansion. Makes sense why Fosun Group wanted to
Yeah.
buy them, grow them in China. You can go back to our previous episode if you haven't heard it to hear more about why Cirque is doing that. Another interesting piece of news following up on something we talked about a couple episodes ago. Ringling Barnum and Bailey, which has now been closed for 9 months. You know, their logo used to be, and maybe still is, but used to be the greatest show on earth. And Kid Rock, who is a rock musician that
Ball with the ball to bang to bang, diggy diggy diggy, set up booty, set up jump the
Sang a song just like that.
boogie.
Wanted to call his current tour he's about to go out on the greatest show on earth. And I guess he has a song titled the same thing. And the idea is that, you know, the tour is named after his song, The Greatest Show on Earth. But Kenneth Feld and the Feld Entertainment Corporation, who own Ringling and closed Ringling, sued Kid Rock for using that name and asked for a court injunction, which means you go to court and the court says until this is solved, you can't use the name. And then Kid Rock said, okay, I'll change my name. And in the meantime, while they're waiting for the court's decision, the court said, actually, you can use the name The Greatest Show on Earth. The reason being is that it does not, Kid Rock using it is not an example of doing harm to Ringling's brand. That was what the judge basically said about it, which is interesting.
Yes, but as we learned in copyright law in grad school, you cannot copyright a title.
Nope.
Because, you know, if people started copywriting words, we'd have a lot less of them to use.
Yes. I think that in this case, it's trademark, right?
Well, I guess it is, like, but it's their slogan, yeah. Right? So essentially it's words. I mean, I think like you could maybe have won it if they were still open, you know, but now that they're closed.
Yeah. What kind of argument to hurt your brand is that? Well, and I guess that's what the court decided. But kind of an interesting thing. We'll see if any more cans of worms and that kind of thing open if people start, you know, using various different Ringling things in ways they couldn't before when Ringling was an open business.
Or maybe they didn't feel like they could because it was open.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, who better than to try it than Kid
Rock? Kid Rock.
Also, it's not like it's Beyonce calling it the greatest show on earth. It's Kid Rock. I mean, I guess he has a following, but it's not like Elton John or Billy Joel. Bruce Springsteen.
No, it's not like
it's
any
Kid
of those
Rock.
Things. It's like Kid Rock.
Not to put down Kid Rock.
Well, I don't know. I'm not a huge Kid Rock fan myself.
So there's this this article from Las Vegas that I think is a really funny title, but it's "Mishap with Eyeglasses Leaves Las Vegas Mayor a Little Blurry." And apparently one of her, I don't know why this is news, but while she's walking, one of her eye lenses popped out, like of her glasses.
Oh, jeez.
And then she's like, wait, stop. I've lost one of my lenses because she couldn't see in one eye. And that was like the beginning of the article. I guess Vegas news is slow right now. But it went on to say that there are three rock shows and one of them is closing in interestingly enough, it's called the world's greatest rock show, but they closed at the Stratosphere. But, you know, I haven't seen any of the rock shows, but apparently a few of them are still kicking, including Tenors of Rock, who is produced by our friends over at UD Factory. But the main part of this article is about Opium.
The upcoming Spiegelworld show at the Cosmopolitan Hotel.
Yes, and nothing really new. I feel like everyone knows this, but you know, for a while, Opium was rumored to be going into the space that was called the Act, which was at the shops at the Palazzo, which was, you know, the Act was a version of the nightclub, The Box in New York. It didn't last very long, but I guess the Venetian Palazzo is the two hotels are actually planning to produce their own show and put it there.
So, but a new variety show, right?
A new circus. Variety show. And now Opium is going to be where Rose Rabbit Lie or Vegas Nocturne was, the Rose Rabbit Lie room. It's so confusing, all those names. But yeah, I mean, how many like circus variety shows can really exist in one space that are all kind of the same?
We'll find out soon.
We will, because now we have, well, Absinthe is still really obviously
kicking.
They're
going up to like 14 shows,
yeah,
something
like,
crazy a week.
Amazing for them. It's a really good show. So who knows, right? We shall play the game. Just like I'm excited for Mean Girls to open so we can start seeing Mean Girls v. SpongeBob.
Yeah, that's being saved for a future episode when we have some Mean Girls stats.
Yeah.
But the SpongeBob stats are coming in.
Yeah, Mean Girls is, everyone's predicting that it's going to give the band's visit a run for its money. I don't think so, but, you know, a little Broadway news to throw in there.
There you go.
On this week's episode, we have Sam Smith, who is a contortionist, draps artist, aerial hoops, silks. I mean, she can really do it all. She ended up being our lead opposite, our other lead in Australia when we did Slumber in Adelaide.
Slumber Down Under.
And she was just an absolute joy to watch on stage every night and to work with. She's in town for vacation. So we were like, we have to interview on this podcast. Sam has a really interesting story because she didn't do the traditional route. She's grew up in Australia where, I think most people think there's a ton of circus opportunities. But Sam did not go to circus school. She did youth circus and then kind of made her own career and way through traveling and going to London and different places in Australia and going on cruise ships. And I think Sam's story is really interesting for people who want to perform and really want to work hard, but don't necessarily think that circus school is the right route for them. I think it's a really fun story. She's so authentic. Really great to hear her point of view. And I think it's a fun episode.
I think so too. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us on iTunes or Apple Music. Please leave us a rating. That's the best way for new people to find the podcast. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, tweet us. Our handle on Instagram is at Hideaway Circus, or you can write us an email at hello@hideawaycircus.com. Here's Sam. Sam, where are you from originally?
I am from Perth in Australia.
Where's Perth in Australia, if you're like looking at
the west
island?
side. So basically on the east side you have everything. You have Sydney, Brisbane, Queensland, Melbourne, Adelaide, and then all the way over there on the other side is Perth. So we're all on our own.
Does Perth have like a good circus scene or something? How did you like discover it?
Well, I was very lucky when I was younger. There was a quite a big youth circus school called Skedaddha, which has sadly closed down now. But there is a very good community circus scene going on there. So there's like a couple of circus schools in and around the city. And yeah, I went to one of them when I was 11. And then they've slowly built up. And now, especially that they have the Fringe Festival in Perth, circus has become even bigger. So I think it's becoming a lot more, and a couple more schools have opened now.
So did you just start doing the youth circus because you were like, I want to do something?
Well, I started dancing when I was 4, and in Western Australia, acrobatics is really normal and big. So if you go to a dance school, you do jazz, tap, ballet, you also do acrobatics. So basically everyone does it. So I started there, and they were like, you're a little weird.
You're really flexible.
Yeah. And I thought that was normal. I was like, yeah, this is, everyone can do this, right? But yeah, and then one day in the newspaper I saw the advertisement for the circus school, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna go try that. It was like a workshop, and I went to try it. And then they offered me a spot in their school because it was invite only. And then I started.
For contortion?
Yes, so they were, it was a school where you do learn everything. So I learned all aerials and most ground things, but specialized in contortion and straps mostly. And I did a little adagio too.
And were you in like regular high school at the same time, or was this in lieu of
Yes.
high? Oh, so you did.
Yeah.
So did you, were your friends like, what on earth is Sam doing, or were they into it?
Well, actually, I kind of lived like a couple different lives because like I would go to school and I wouldn't necessarily tell everyone. Like I wouldn't be like, I'm in the circus. Like I just didn't really tell people until they found out. And then actually it wasn't until my primary school. So in Australia you do primary school until year 7, and that's your last year. And one of my teachers saw me perform at a festival, and she was like, I didn't know you did this, blah, blah. And then she made me perform in front of our whole school in year 7, and I was so embarrassed, but I did it.
What did you do?
I did my contortion solo. And everyone just was kind of shocked, and they were like, oh, okay.
You're like, oh,
Yeah.
wow.
Yeah. But yeah, and then I went to high school, and I still didn't really tell anyone until people found out. But yeah, everyone was like, oh my God, you're actually in the circus. And I was like,
do you have siblings?
Yes, I have one older sister.
Does she do the same kind of things, or are you like the lone circus child?
No, I am. So literally everyone in my family works in a hospital except me.
Oh.
So like my dad is a carpenter in a hospital, so he, builds everything there. My mum is a nurse, and then my sister is a dietitian. So she
Oh.
also works in a hospital. and then there's me.
So you're the black sheep. Yes. The odd one out.
So sure. Where'd you get the flexibility? Is anyone else like just no. so? No, you're just no. weird.
My sister has great turnout. Like oh. great. She's amazing. And I think like if she, because she did dancing when she was little too, but apparently mum went to watch her and she would just be so bored. So bored. So mum just took her out and she was like, she doesn't want to do this clearly. So she got taken out. But I think if she did it, she would be like, we'd be like a great twin act.
Yeah.
Because I think she would be flexible.
Well, you're like, I mean, some contortionists, you see them and you're like, oh, wow, they're really flexible. But then when I saw you perform your act for the first time, I was like, oh my God, she just like is flexible. It's just like, you are flexible. Yeah. Oh my God.
So I'm guessing just from the way you told that story, your parents are pretty supportive of the decision to do service.
Oh, they're great. They're so supportive. They're kind of like, if I bring up an idea like, oh, I'm thinking about going here, they'll be like, oh, okay. And then they'll just kind of be like, so tell me about that. Like, why are you going there? And then I'll tell them and they'll be like, okay, great. Yeah. Like, they've never not once been like, you're not doing that. Like, if I want to do something, like, they'll let me try. And if it doesn't work, they'll be like, it's okay. Try something else. Like, it's fine. But, yeah, they're great. And they're always, like, they were the ones who drove me from, like, dance class to circus class to show to, like, everything when I was little. So, yeah, they're so great. They're so great.
Were you still at the same school then through high school?
Circus school?
Yeah.
Yes. So, I went there when I was 11. Mm-hmm. And then the owners of the school actually moved to Montreal to work with a lot of schools and people over there. So unfortunately, that's when it shut down. But it was actually when I was 17.
Good timing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was really upset, but it was kind of like a moment to be like, okay, I should probably be moving on now anyway.
Yeah.
And going to find other things and, yeah.
So you finish high school and your coaches have left. Mm-hmm. Like, now what? What's on your brain? Like, how are you going to make it to the next level?
It was kind of like instantly like, okay, I want to work now. But I knew that no one would hire me because I was so young. So that's when I kind of just kept training myself. I was still dancing. I was teaching. I taught a lot.
Where did you teach?
I taught at my dance school. So I taught acrobatics there. And I also did my acrobatic arts course. So then I became a qualified acrobatic teacher.
I'm so glad that they didn't have an acrobatic class in my dance school because I would have been kicked out. Like, can you do a forward roll?
No.
Cartwheel?
No. But yeah, so I just kind of took that time to like save money, do as many courses as I could, keep training, think of ideas, like try and like build an act type thing. And then started putting myself out there, went on contracts, did stuff like that.
So what was the first couple of things you did professionally?
My first ever thing I did was one of my friends who's a dancer went on a contract in India and did a Bollywood contract. And I was kind of like I knew as soon as I was kind of like 16, 17, that I didn't want to be a professional dancer. Like, I wanted to do circus. Like, that was my thing. But I was kind of like, I was like, this could be fun. Like, you know, dancing in Bollywood movies, basically you go to rehearsal every day and then, you know, you do like 2 weeks of shooting type thing. So I was like, this could be fun. I'll be dancing all the time. And then I thought about it and then they contacted me and they were like, oh, you do aerial. We want you here now. Like, we want you in this movie. So I was kind of like, okay. So my very first contract was in India in Bollywood movies, which was interesting. Like, it was so much fun and it taught me so much. Like, living in India was just an eye-opener.
Did you get, like, stomach aches all the time? Belly.
Do you know, I didn't. Like, the first week I got there, my stomach went kind of a little weird, but it was normal. Like, it was no big deal. And then I was just, like, so conscious about, like, hand sanitizer. And I somehow was fine. Like, the whole contract. It was great. But, yeah, so that was my first contract. And I was kind of like, okay, cool. Went home. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to focus on circus now. Like, I've had my fun. Like, it was a good contract. And then after that, that's when I started my first cruise ship.
Mm.
So I went as a specialty act there.
Which cruise line?
It is Oceania Marina. So it was kind of like a 6-star luxury ship. It was a bit smaller than your average like Royal or Norwegian
type. I feel like the cruise ship gig can either be awesome or terrible depending on like how many shows you have and who's
isn't
it
like if you're a specialty act you get treated like amazing, and then if you're like a normal act you're like get down there in a bunk bed of like no window. Maybe I'm exaggerating.
Oh no, you're not. Oh. You're not. No, yeah, you either have to be like ready for cruise ship life or not. Like you do live in a bunk bed room with no window. Like if you're not okay with that, don't go on a cruise ship. But yeah, I was treated quite well.
What were you hired to do?
Contortion and aerial hoop.
Mm.
But when I got to rehearsal and they found out that I could dance, then they put me in
the dance.
Yeah,
that's really the best, like, hidden secret of yours.
Which I didn't mind because, like, I do love dancing. So when I get to, like, join in, I'm like, that's fine. Yeah. I'll do it. Like,
I didn't even know that you had a real dance background because, you know, for all those people on the podcast who didn't get to go see Slumber in Australia, Lee, our lead girl, got injured, like, I don't know.
Halfway through.
Yeah. And there's this like dance club, nightclub piece, and it's usually the three dancers running around. And then Lee was out, so we're like, oh shit. And then you just learned it. And it's not easy choreography. It's like hip hop, Kiyonimari choreography with a little bit of bow thrown in there, Bow Park. And it's not easy. And you just like picked it up and I was like, whoa.
Where did you come from?
Yeah. And you are good at it.
Because we were like, we were doing the like little mini shows all around Adelaide. And then Bo was like, I'm going to teach you hands to yourself. And I was like, okay. And so I just learned it for fun. And then when Lee got injured, Bo was like, Sam will do it. And I was like, oh, will I? Okay.
But it really is such like a nice secret skill that you have.
Yeah, it's a good little, like, backup.
Can you sing too?
Oh, my God, no. Like, I'm tone deaf. And everyone's always like, oh, my gosh, no, you're not. Like, everyone can hold a tune. And I'm like, no, seriously. The first cruise ship I did, I think I was about 20 or something. And our very first day, our first rehearsal was with our musical director. And we all sat down and they gave us sheet music. And I was like, what have I got myself into? Like, I can't sing. Nobody told me about this. Nobody told me I had to sing on a ship. Anyway, and then I told my friend who I was sat next to, like, I can't sing. Like, what are we doing? She's like, don't worry. Like, you're not going to have a microphone or anything. I'm pretty sure it's just so everyone knows the words and, like, blah, blah. I'm like, cool. So we start singing and she sat next to me and we stop. She's like, wow, you really are tone deaf. Oh, and I was like, oh, okay.
I thought she was going to say to you, just mouth it. That's what I say to Josh. Just maybe mouth it.
That's what I do now.
Silent
singing.
Silent
singing. Yeah. So no to singing. I wish I was like a triple threat, but no.
You'd be like a quad. Well, you can act.
I mean, yeah.
You had a few lines.
I had a few lines.
Lee.
In a very believable bloody deaf. Many nights.
It was. Very, very blue.
But we'll get to Slumber later on in the episode. Yeah. What took you to London? Because you lived there for a few years.
Yeah,
as well, right?
So I moved there a couple of years ago, basically because as much as I love Australia, like I love it, it's amazing. To work full time as a circus performer, you can't really. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's a good corporate scene. There's a lot of corporate things, and there's a lot of teaching, but I really love the cabaret scene and like, you know, little dinner shows and stuff like that, and there's just unfortunately not enough there.
Seems like Australia, it's really also like you can really work during like the fringe time.
Yeah.
The fringe circuit seems like it's so massive.
Yeah, it is. So like, especially because they have Adelaide too, so you know, you can do the Perth scene and then the Sydney Festival as well, Adelaide Fringe, and Perth Fringe.
Isn't there one in Melbourne though?
Yeah, there is a little one, but I don't think it's as big.
Okay.
But
yeah.
A lot of people still go there. But yeah, kind of once that's over, like the middle of the year, you're like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
So I went over there. My duo partner was over there and he was like, come, we'll work in our duo. And
duo straps number?
Duo hoop. And so I was like, cool, let's train. Let's see what happens. And we went over there. And it just blew my mind how many like cabarets and dinner shows there are, and the fact that I could work like Tuesday through to Saturday every night. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So then, yeah, I met loads of great people over there, got to perform in a lot of places and just kind of started to create London life. And yeah, I really liked it. So I'm probably going to go back this year.
Nice. So I feel like my understanding of the London scene, the three main pillars of it are the Box, Café de Paris, and Circus Restaurant.
Correct.
Right?
Absolutely.
Would you mind going over and saying just briefly what those are and what kind of gigs they're like?
So the Box is like a kind of like an exclusive club. And they have shows at 1 and 2 a.m. And it's kind of like a... It's not what you expect at your average club. Like, it's not like nightclub music and a performer above you just kind of like jamming. Like, a lot goes into these shows, and each act has like a specific storyline and a specific meaning. For example, like, they have this event called Swap Box, and me and my duo partner, who's a guy, it's probably one of my favorite acts I've done. We did, we swapped genders. So basically we both had like gimp masks on, and I was dressed as much as I could as a boy, and he was dressed as much as he could as a girl. Like, he had a weave and everything. And then so we do our act and everyone's going mental, and then at the very end we take our masks off and I like flip my hair everywhere and everyone's like, oh my God. Like, no, and our friends were there and they were like, I didn't realize because we're both very similar. We're both very tall and like...
Tall and gangly.
Lanky, yeah. So they have really interesting acts like that, you know, a couple circus acts, a couple shock acts, they have dancers, but yeah. And then Circus Restaurant is this really amazing venue where you go there for dinner and they have a really nice bar as well. And in the middle is a long table where the VIPs sit, and every kind of like 20 minutes to half an hour, there's a circus performer on there. So it's very intimate.
On the table.
Yeah, on the table. So, you know, you'll have your starters and then they'll clear it and a circus performer will come on.
Hey, I was going to say, well, how do you dance around some calamari?
Or just knock some glasses over.
Yeah, you like do your like bend back bend. Yeah. It's like, boop, boop. Sorry.
So then they clear it and then they have their mains and all that. And there's always like a host there. So it's like a really big night at circus if you go there as a guest, you know, you have your full meal and you'll see probably about 3 to 4 acts, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one, Café de Paris, is every Friday they have their like set show. So they've actually just opened a new show there called The Service, which I was supposed to do, but unfortunately I left London, so I couldn't do it. But I'm going to go see that when I get back. And then Saturdays they have Showtime, which is your classic variety show with a host, and everyone comes, has a meal normally, or they can watch from above, and there'll be like singers, dancers, circus performers, comedians. But yeah,
nice. Yeah, I gotta say, been to all three. They all have different things, but circus, or at least the Café de Paris, seems to have like the most stuff I haven't seen anywhere else. Because I've seen the Box stuff. A lot of it's also in New York.
Yeah.
And Café de Paris, first time I saw Piff, the Magic Dragon, who now has a show in Vegas.
Yeah.
And the Hand Tappers.
Up and Over It on Instagram.
Up and Over It. They're great.
Ruben K.
And Ruben K, yeah, right?
Ruben K. That's where I met Ruben K, actually.
Which we saw his one man show in Adelaide.
Yes.
Where I would say the speakers were turned up a little too high. It was a little bit loud for me. And, you know, Ruben's like belting out these songs. I was like, oh my God, it's so loud in this like 50-seater small ass tent. But I'm going to give Ruben another chance because I felt like that was like not his venue. Well, also because Puppetry of the Pianist, remember, was next door.
Yes, and they were super loud.
Yeah, the audience was like, wah!
So we had to compete that night.
Yeah, but I really do want to go to London and hit all three of those.
Yeah. He's very at home at Café de Paris as well.
Mm. And while you were in London, you did La Soirée, right? At least for one season?
No, I did La Soirée, but as soon as I came home from London, because I came home to Perth.
You did it in Perth.
Yeah, I did it in Perth.
And that's where you met Brett Pfister.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I was doing La Soirée. Like, that is the classic, speaking of cabaret kind of gigs. Like, doesn't get more cabaret than that.
It was so great. Everyone, because that was my very first time in them. I didn't know anyone in there. And Brett Haylock was like, yes, perfect, come on in, and we'll do your straps number.
Brett Haylock is the producer right, just forever.
Yep. And I was like, awesome. And every single person in that company was just so welcoming. They gave me my time.
What did you do in La Soirée?
My contortion straps.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brett Pfister was pulling me. He was pulling my lines. So he helped me tech, and he did all of that and made sure I was comfortable, because I was like, I think I was the only newbie at the time. Mm. But no, it was great. And then we did our shows. Everyone was great. And yeah, it was just, it's just such a surreal feeling being like on that tiny little red stage. Like, it's nothing. Like, it's just literally this tiny little red stage, and you're like, this is amazing. But yeah, no, I loved it. It was great. I would do it in a heartbeat again.
It was in New York for, I don't know, like
9 months, maybe.
9 months.
And now the theater that it was in is being destroyed and turned into apartment buildings.
It's actually Traces, the Seven Finger Show, was there. And then La Soirée was there a while ago, right? And then it was back. And where was La Soirée?
I think we were there once, and in between Traces and La Soirée were like a few musicals.
Okay, and then La Soirée, but I saw it 3 times. Yeah. But it was when I was trying to like get with Josh me. To fall in love with me. So I saw it like every chance I could. And I was like, okay, I'm learning about circus.
I love circus.
So I love much. It so much. But it's a really cool show. I had the most fun.
And they have like... You probably saw different acts then if you saw it 3 times. Like, they always change out, so it keeps it interesting.
Yeah, and seeing the different like clowns.
Yeah.
Is always good. What's her name? Mookie?
Yeah, Mookie.
Was she in the show? Nice. Oh my gosh.
She's Welsh?
I don't know. She does this like amazing.
She was in the original Varakai.
Reference.
She does a duet with the West Side Story between Tony and Maria, but she pulls up a guy and then has all the lyrics that he needs to sing. Like on her, or say like on her, like body everywhere, and then they do this like duet.
Needs to read.
Yeah. It's really, really good. She was amazing. But anyway, so you did La Soirée,
and then shortly after, you must have seen our posting for.
Yeah, one of my friends actually sent me a screenshot of it, and he was like, "You should audition for this," and I was like. Yeah, okay, because I was like just finishing a contract in the States and I was going home to Perth to do La Soirée. And I was like, oh, it's in Adelaide. That's perfect. Like, I can go there after. And I was like, great. So then I was like, oh, I'll message you guys. I saw the act and I was like, what is this show? I was like, I don't get it. What is this?
Yeah, it's a really, I mean.
Well, I would say that Sam, maybe more than any other video application I have, received, crushed the online portion of auditioning more than ever.
Yeah.
Which I will repeat for people who are wondering, how do you get cast, do good casting emails? But the first thing that nobody does, but Sam did, was before the video starts, looked into the camera and the microphone and said, hi, I'm Sam, and like talked for a minute and then did your act. So we got to hear your voice and write about you as a person. Mm-hmm.
But what's awesome is, so the act that we were looking for is the contortion act, which was in the show, and This girl gets stabbed right before the contortion act, and the idea is she's like coming back to life throughout the act, and she's like bloody. So as someone who like doesn't know the show, and you see it, you're probably like, what the deuce am I supposed to be doing? But you know what you did that was so amazing was that you like made yourself look like in the costume.
Yeah, I did.
And it was so easy to imagine you in the show, you know, and then you crushed it. And what I loved is you were like, you know, I changed a few things that better fit me, and I mean, it was just like, oh yeah. We found her.
So if you're a struggling contortionist out there needing tips, find Sam on Facebook and ask her how to audition.
Where were you when you did that audition
that was a
video?
Big stage. I was
in the States, so I did a Christmas contract with Cirque Dreams.
Oh.
So I was in Orlando doing a show at a convention center there.
Oh.
And so it was, and I'm pretty sure I wrote an email like, sorry, I'm surrounded by Christmas trees and like giant gingerbread men. Like, but this is it.
Perfect setting for a girl who just got stabbed.
Yeah.
And speaking of other recent things, you just got off of a cruise ship show called Love Riot, which is by this company Strut and Fret, who's like, I don't know, the premier Australian cabaret producer, I would say.
Yeah. So I just did 3 months on there with Strut and Fret, and there it was a brand new show last year, so I think it started in June. So it's still very new, but it is just so much fun. Like, it is just so random. There's so much going on. And it's another show that we get to dance in. So for me, I love it. But yeah, so we did dance in that. We did a little bit of aerial, like group aerial. And then I did my contortion number. But yeah, it was so much fun.
So one thing that I wanted to ask you about in this interview before you came over was, like me and like some of my favorite circus performers, you aren't classically trained in a circus college mm-hmm. setting. So I'm wondering, did you ever have moments where you were like, how do I compete against these people? Or like, how do I write an act compared to them? And like sort of going through that like mental struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I went to youth school, as I told you. And then after that, I did have a moment of being like, should I go to this school? Because there was a school that I was going to go to. And I was kind of just like, I don't know, something just didn't feel right. I just didn't want to go, so I just didn't go. And then as I was going on, I was like, how do I do this? Like, how do I make contacts? Mm. How do I get my name out there? How do I compete with all these people who, you know, just graduate and then magically just get a job? Because, you know, that's how it works. Like, they come to their, like, student showcase and then they get a job. Like, I didn't have any of that. So, and that, I guess that's another reason why I went to London as well, just to kind of get my name out there, meet more people, because in this industry, obviously, everyone travels. So, you know, the amount of people I meet in London, I now see, like, in Fringe in Australia and stuff like that. But I think for someone who doesn't go to school, it just makes you want to work harder. Like, for me, I'm like, well, I don't have that advantage, so I just need to put my head down, you know, apply for as many jobs as I can, meet as many people as I can, and just train constantly, because that's the only way you can really do it.
You also have so many different things you can do, which it's funny because I feel like that's something that is really valuable, but a lot of circus people who come from circus school really focus on like one apparatus or like one act, and they have a secondary act, but like you can do straps, you can do hoop, you can do contortion, you can do a bit of handstands, you know, and like partnering, and it's so valuable. But I think maybe it's like, since you don't have a class structure of like having to pick something, you kind of have the more ability to be like, oh, I'll try all these different things.
Yeah, definitely. And especially when like, because when I was younger and I did start working the corporate scene in Australia, they would be like, okay, we need a silk performer. And I'd be like, well, I'm not going to say no. Like, obviously, I'll do it. So then I'd train silks. Like,
oh, wait, you can do silk too. Jesus Christ.
And then I'll be like, yeah, sure. So then, yeah, you just end up training everything. And that was another thing that I'm really, like, grateful and thankful for, is that I went to this youth school because they did have everything. Like, and it kind of made me figure out what I liked and don't like. Like, I don't know why, but I absolutely hate trapeze. I hate it. Like, I think I love watching it. Yeah. I think it's great. But if I sit on a trapeze, I'm like, I want to get down. I hate it. Like, so, like, I did a little bit of trapeze at this school, but that was it. But yeah, but they like, we would do a circuit every day where we do pretty much all aerials. And then obviously when I got older, that's when I kind of was like, okay, I'm going to focus on this. But yeah, so I've had like, I was really lucky that I did get that background training in most aerials. So like, I do know the basics.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like also one of the things that happens in circus school, and not to spend too much time shitting on it, but I think is an interesting point, is that you spend a lot of time like thinking about yourself and thinking about your own personal development. Mm-hmm. And at least for me, when I was working at the Box and, you know, visiting Cafe Periodo in London and Circus Restaurant and Plus Valeria when it was in town and Spiegelworld, is that by virtue of having to go and see and work in circus, you see so many acts and you're actually exposed to much, much more influences and weird, wonderful things than you do if you are, you know, trapped in Quebec City for, you know, 2.5-3 years where you only get the things that...
We're also then focusing on, like, creating acts that are marketable.
Yes.
You know, you see what people are booking and you see what people are responding to.
Mm. That was another thing I noticed when I made the change from Australia to London, because Australia is that corporate scene. Like, you know, they want something very classic. They want something pretty. They want something sparkly. You go to London and you're like, oh my gosh, like there is such a range of different acts here, and there's so much more, and you're just like, why have I not explored this? Like, why have I not stepped outside the comfort box and like done right. this? But yeah, I definitely think performing and experience, you learn a lot more than potentially just sitting in school working on this like one act type mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah. I get it if you want to do swinging trapeze. That's the exception. Oh my you want to do swinging trapeze, go to school and learn from a good coach.
Oh my goodness, yes.
You know, there are things you don't need to
like
go to school.
Like trapeze pole probably too.
Yeah, there are, you know, you can always take classes. It's not bad to study. But it's equally valuable to do shows and see shows.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Learn from watching.
Yeah, learn from watching and meeting people and having conversations.
Yeah.
Another thing that I wanted to talk about was, and you just start touching on it, but I want to pick it apart a little bit more. The difference between Australia, the Australian scene, and other scenes. And I think Americans in general have this like very rosy view of like, oh my God, Australia must be so great. Look at how all these companies coming out of it. Look at all like the funding for these festivals. But I'm wondering, you talked a little bit about being a circus performer in it, but maybe also talk about a little bit like what the kinds of shows besides corporate are and how that compares, but generally to the UK or the US when you've been in. Things you've noticed as like big differences.
Yeah, for sure. Basically, first of all, I think Australia is very behind on a lot of things. Like, for example, we've only just got gay marriage legalized. Like, where have we been?
So I forgot that was a thing in yeah. Australia. We went over there. Vincent, Vincent, our stage manager, and who's gay and fabulous. He's like, I'm a little nervous. And I was like, why? And so was Lee, who's, you know, Filipino, was like, I'm a little nervous. Like, why?
Yeah, it's mental to think that we're so behind, especially when I come to places like America, like in New York, and I'm literally like, you can do anything here. Like, yeah. Literally.
You could walk down the street really naked and you'll be like, oh, it's just New York.
Yeah. But yeah, we're just so behind on a lot of things, and the art industry is just... Like, I remember when Absinthe came, and you've seen Absinthe, yeah. right? Yeah. So it's a great show and so out there, and, like, obviously it's in Vegas and it's amazing. Comes to little old Perth, and, like, the Perth audiences who don't see anything, like, we don't have shows, we don't have anything like that, are just, like, stunned, and they don't know how to respond. And I'm sitting there, like, laughing, thinking that it's amazing, and they're just like, what oh is God. This? Yeah, like, so when we don't really have many, like, resident shows. And so basically any show that comes often does very, very well. And it's always, you know, international stuff. On the East Coast, I would definitely say that there's more. And there's also things like Circus Oz. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as far as shows go, like if it's like a Wednesday night and you're like, oh, I feel like going out to see a show, you can't. There's no show to go see. Like, unless there's a show in town like La Soirée or Absinthe or something like that. I think at the moment there's the Unbelievables, which is in town. And I think they've already done really well ticket sale wise because, you know, it's like a variety show with magic, circus, everything like that. But yeah, unfortunately... Everything in the arts is just so behind. It's so, so behind. And that's another thing. When I went to London, it just amazed me that I could go see a show on a Tuesday night. I was like, and there's so many venues. There's so many little, like, comedy clubs. There's so many just opportunities, really, because Australia just isn't there yet. And I think it's definitely grown. Like, fringe-wise, it's grown because in Perth in particular... I did the very first Fringe season there, which was, I think, about 6 years ago. And it was tiny. It was, like, at that point, it was, like, two tents and, like, a few circus shows. And now we have, like, four parks going. Like, So it's definitely growing, but...
But unless it's the Fringe season, it's,
like... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like in Sydney, it's really, like, the Opera House and, like, their... three venues that have the shows going on. Yeah. So we had Laura Heislinger, who is now actually producing and programming The Underbelly.
Oh, Valley. Yeah, I did that too.
Oh yeah, we skipped over that.
Yeah.
She's now working there, but because she lives in Sydney, and then we met her in Adelaide.
Right.
And but now she's doing that, which is like awesome. Also, so shout out to London, her.
Yeah. For the same. Mm-hmm. Same reason.
Yeah. What's the show you did at Underbelly?
It was a show called Between the Sheets, which is it is Between a super fun show, which is run by Miss Polly Ray, who is a wonderful burlesque performer in London and singer. So she kind of like hosts the show and sings. She actually sung our number. So I did, that's where I did my Joy Aerial Hoop, and she sung live. So it was really special, like probably one of my favorite acts that I've done. But yeah, so it was like a burlesque dance show, and then we did the circus mm-hmm. act in it.
When you want to train a new trick or skill, since you don't have like a real home base, or be like, you know, like a coach, you're like, this is my coach.
Yeah.
How do you learn them? Do you just like watch them and then try to figure it out, or?
Yeah. No. So normally I would always train with someone. I always find
with like another performer even.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And then I'll kind of see it and be like, oh, I could do that, and then find some kind of like training technique. So like either build up the strength for it, do drills, or like attempt it in some way, but like not the full skill. And then I'll just keep doing that until I build up the confidence to be like, okay, I'm just gonna give this a go, and then put like a million crash mats around me or whatever the skill is, and just try it, because that's what you have to do in circus. You just have to try.
Do you train at Circus Space when you go to London, or do you train?
Yes. Yeah. Circus Space.
Which is like a pretty big facility, right?
Yeah, it's beautiful. That's another thing about Australia and London, and I'm sure America. When I went to London and went to National Circus School, I walked in and I was like, oh, the opportunity. It's like they just have so many studios, so many rooms, so many rigging points that I'm like, you people take this for like granted. Like things like that just don't exist in Australia. Like,
yeah, not even really in New York. There's sort of like two spaces, and we had the woman who runs the main one on two episodes ago, Circus Warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I got to say, one of the things about London is they also got great training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. So, and they have a great program there. And for me, who I didn't go to the school, I wasn't a graduate, they still like fully welcomed me, and it's not the most expensive thing in the world. Like I could go train there most days, and just you go do your thing. You know, they have their set rules, like always train mm-hmm. with someone, always use a mat type thing, like blah, blah. But yeah, it's huge. It's clean. It's amazing. And they have so many like apparatuses and like kind of things amazing. That you can use.
So yeah. What's on the horizon for Sam Smith? What do you really, is there a show that you really want to do is in your bucket list? Is there anything that?
I would like to do Slumber Not Down Under. Like Slumber somewhere else.
Yeah.
Slumber America too.
Yeah.
Working on it.
Whenever. Just Slumber
it's
in
It's like
general.
When you're 50. I'm just
But no, for me, like, I just really, like, the best thing is when you feel like you're locked into a show and you feel comfortable. So for me, it would be like just a cabaret type show where I can do my thing, I can have fun. I think that's why I really enjoyed Love Right as well, because I got to do my contortion act, but I was still throughout the show. Like, mm-hmm. I still got to dance throughout it. I still got to do all these other little bits where I could laugh at myself. Like, it was fine. But yeah, something where I can just do that. But I'm also haven't found a place where I'm like, this is home. Mm. Like, I do love London, but I don't think that's home for me. And like, I'll always go back there. But yeah, I don't know yet.
Brooklyn's pretty nice in summertime.
Brooklyn's looking pretty good. Yeah, summertime.
You come back in the summer.
Yeah, coming back in a few months.
That's when you'll fall in love.
You can live
with Bo and Popo.
And Popo, Bobo, and
her
Popo.
Little corgi dog.
Yes. I love her. But yeah, I'm right now I have zero plans, and it's kind of worrying, but I'm kind of like, it's okay.
You'll be fine.
We'll see what happens. But yeah, I'm still kind of just in my exploring stage where I'm trying to figure out where I want to be. But yeah.
I think that's everyone.
Yeah.
Not just
you. Have you visited Las Vegas yet?
No, I've never been to Vegas.
You have to go to Vegas and explore that scene.
We want to do Slumber in Vegas.
I would love to go to Vegas because, again, I bet I would go there and be like, why is there a show every like corner I look at?
The thing is, everything is so cheap in Vegas. You can do a show and be like ensemble and get a house.
Yeah. Oh. And then you can be like Brett Pfister, who has a little convertible Miata and bop around. In
hey, Brett.
I'm coming over.
Yeah.
So we finish each podcast asking the same three questions of every guest. Mm-hmm. So the first question is, has there been a piece of advice really good or really bad that has stuck with you?
Yes. Something that someone, I don't even know if they said it to me or if they just said it to someone, but they always said like, because when I was younger and I was doing shows that I didn't want to do, like working at like a stupid nightclub or doing like, you know, a set that I didn't want to go and do, someone said to me like, you never know who is watching you. Like, you don't know who is in that crowd. Pretend like the director of like every circus show you want to be in is in that crowd and you just like smash it and make sure that like every show is a good show. And I'm like, that is so true, because when you like, when you do shows that you don't want to do, it kind of makes you hate, or not hate, but not enjoy. You're like, why am I doing this? Like, I don't like it. But then if, you know, you have that outlook on it, you're like, I'm going to smash every single show that I do and I'm going to love this job and I'm going to get paid to do what I love. And yeah, and it also makes you better. Like, if you don't care, you're not going to put effort in. You're not going to train. But yeah, if you see it like that, then you're good.
That's a great piece of advice. Mm. The second question is, I think there are a lot of people who are in circus schools who are listening to this, definitely a few in the U.S., and we like to give advice on like things that they should go see or watch or read, and it doesn't have to be circus-related or it could be circus-related, but has there been a piece of art, maybe circus art, that you think was influential and you would recommend?
For me, honestly, it was like a change in location. So the moment I moved to London and just saw... And I just took time to go and see as many shows as I could and meet people. That was the moment where I was like, oh my God, there's so much more in this world. And it makes you want to explore. So after that, that's when I started like, you know, YouTubing people, looking at like seeing what shows there are in different places, like seeing what their style is like, finding your own style, like what do I enjoy type thing. But yeah, if I was in circus school now, I would just be... like looking to the future, because obviously like you're going to graduate one day and you want to know what you want to do. Like, you don't want to graduate and then just stop and find yourself just like working in a cafe or something. Like, you know, figure out what kind of show you want to do. Are you someone who wants to be in like a Cirque du Soleil show and perform every single night doing that? Are you someone who wants to do the cabaret scene and like, you know, laugh at yourself and make ridiculous acts type thing? Like, I think if you can see as much as you can, figure out who you want to be, then after school you'll be sorted.
Nice.
And you know what I like about you so much is I feel like you're very authentic and very open to trying new things and
absolutely,
and changing, and it's just so refreshing and nice to work with someone like that.
Yeah, being open is for sure another thing, because you're like, you're not going to go to a job and they're going to be like, okay, our ceiling is 10 meters high and you're going to do your act that you've done for the past 3 years. Like, that doesn't happen ever anywhere. No. Like, you get to a venue and you're like, right, the ceiling is 2 meters high and there's like, the stage is this big. Great. Like,
what can I do?
Yeah. Actually, that is another piece of advice I would give.
Yeah.
Whenever you go to a gig, be prepared to change. Like, there will always be change. Like, if they tell you there's no pulley system, don't freak out. Like, that is so normal, and that is something that I think people don't realize, like, especially in these amazing circus schools where they do have like high ceilings and like every apparatus and all these things available to them, and then people go out into the real world and do jobs and they're like, what is this? Like,
I know.
Be adaptable.
Adaptable.
Good word.
And our last question is, who do you think we should have on the podcast?
Oh, I mean, besides me.
Besides the famous singer, Sam Smith.
The singer, Sam Smith. I mean, if you can get him on here, that would be nice. Oh, let's say Reuben K, because we talked about him.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I feel like I would have a good conversation with him.
I feel like he would also, your podcast would probably be like 3 hours long.
like oh my God.
Yeah.
We're going to have a circus historian on
soon,
which either could be like the longest podcast ever recorded for us, because it's like circus history. Where are we starting? Like, you know, in Greek times?
Where do we start this?
Where do we start this history? But, okay, Reuben. And maybe we have to take a trip to London.
And see you there.
Yeah.
Sam, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
Yeah, we loved having you.
What's the Australian way of saying bye again?
Good day.
That is hello. Yeah. Good day.
Night.
Night. It's probably just the most like abbreviated thing that you could do. Just be like, bye.
That was our interview with Sam Smith.
If you like our podcast, make sure to rate us on iTunes, because that's the best thing for us. So rate us on iTunes. If nothing else, just rate us on iTunes and rate us well. Don't say it's bad. And then you can also follow us on Instagram at Hideaway Circus. Follow us on Twitter, tweet us, Facebook like us, email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com. And I hope you have a better week than last week.
Talk soon.